I'm proud to be a Jew, but that's way too Jewish for me.
Shalom, and welcome to the Two Jewish Radio Show with Rabbi Sam Kohan and friends, a weekly serving of everything Jewish. We'll have a great hour together of news, music, comedy, and conversation. Our guest this morning is writer Amy Efron, author of the book Loose Diamonds. We'll also have visits from our Two Jewish expert on the international scene, Tom Price, and our maven on Israel, Guy Gelbert. Please email your comments to us at twojewishradio@yahoo.com or visit us on the web at twojewishradio.com. And now, here's Rabbi Sam Kohan and Two Jewish.
Shalom and l'shana tova tika tevu v'techa temu, a happy, healthy, and good new year. I hope that all of you had an enjoyable, meaningful Rosh Hashanah, the Jewish New Year, Wednesday, Thursday, and for those of you who are conservative or Orthodox, Friday as well. You know, this particular arrangement of the holidays is in some ways the most challenging for observant Jews. When Rosh Hashanah falls on Wednesday night, as it did last week, it makes the days run something like this. Wednesday night, Rosh Hashanah evening services. Thursday morning, services for the first day of Rosh Hashanah, all morning. Thursday afternoon, Tashlich services. Thursday night, second day Rosh Hashanah evening services. Friday morning, second day Rosh Hashanah morning services. Friday night, Shabbat evening services, followed by Saturday morning, Shabbat Shuvah services. In effect, observant Jews spend about 3.5 days straight, mostly in temple, with the added restriction of not being permitted to drive, turn on lights, watch TV, go on the internet, talk on the phone, listen to the radio, use fire, or work. And then, after Yom Kippur on the following Shabbat, that's this Friday and Saturday, the same exact pattern repeats 2 and then again 3 weeks later for Sukkot and Shmini Atzeret and Simchat Torah, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, and Saturday, all Judaism, all the time. It makes for a very fulfilling and rich month of deeply Jewish experiences, but it is more than a little bit overwhelming. With all due respect to the passion, commitment, and dedication of Orthodox and observant conservative Jews, it makes you understand why Reform Judaism is so much more popular these days in America. And that's coming from a rabbi, admittedly a Reform rabbi. Now, to put it in perspective, whether you are Reform, conservative, Orthodox, Reconstructionist, Renewal, or just kind of Jewish, the holiday coming up this Friday and Saturday is not one you should miss. Yom Kippur, the Jewish Day of Atonement, holiest of holies of days, the fast day that begins this Friday night just before sundown with Kol Nidre and concludes Saturday night after Ne'ilah with the last blast of the shofar and a breakfast, that is the one time when all Jews, and I mean all, need to focus on how to make their lives what they wish them to be in the new year. I believe the best place to do that, maybe the only real place to do that, is the synagogue, the temple, where the music is the finest of the entire year, where the services are designed to bring on introspection and holiness at a deeper level than any other time. The melody that captures the essence of Yom Kippur best is also the only melody that people come to temple just to hear, the Kol Nidre, the renunciation of failed vows that begins the night of Yom Kippur. It's the melody that for many people captures the heart of the Jewish experience with just a few moments of music. Here's the great cantor Alberto Mizrahi's rendition of the first part of the Kol Nidre. Vachinoyei That was most of the Kol Nidre, as sung by cantor Alberto Mizrahi with an arrangement by Shalom Secunda. Kol Nidre is designed to bring us close to what is holiest within us, and at this time of atonement and return, we do well to remember as well that holiness begins for Jews with personal action, mitzvot, not simply with words or professions of faith. The way to improve the world is by doing acts of goodness, blessing, and courage, and charity, not by talking about them, not even with God. As our tradition teaches, for sins against God, the Day of Atonement atones, but for sins committed against another human being, Yom Kippur, the Day of Atonement, does not atone. We must turn to those people and apologize and seek their forgiveness. That's what we dedicate ourselves to this week, actions that matter and improve the world. We do, however, need God's help. And that's never more clear than in the Kol Nidre's soaring conclusion. Here's Israeli cantor and Broadway star David Fisher's end of the Kol Nidre. The melody of Kol Nidre is there to bring us to tshuva, repentance, to help us learn how to work to heal injustice and brokenness. It begins this Friday night at sundown, and for those of you who haven't yet made arrangements, go to your nearest synagogue immediately. This is a night you don't want to miss. You also won't want to miss our guest this morning, Amy Efron, an author, screenwriter. At the ripe old age of 17, she wrote a magazine piece on the Charlie Manson trial and interviewed Squeaky Fromm. Find out what that was like and a great deal more when we come back in a few moments on Too Jewish.
Safety. It's a word we take for granted at home and at the workplace. But sometimes safety isn't a sure thing. Environmental Strategies, Inc. is an environmental remediation company that's been promoting safe living in Arizona since 1989. Environmental Strategies specializes in asbestos and lead abatement, mold remediation, and industrial cleaning. In addition, they have a building and remodeling division that makes it convenient for clients to get all their services from one contractor. Environmental Strategies jobs range from seam tape removal in a single-family home to insulation removal in a Challenger Learjet aircraft and everything in between. So, if you're in need of asbestos or lead removal, mold remediation, industrial cleaning, or top-notch general contracting services, call Environmental Strategies today at 884-1114. Estimates and bids are free and confidential. Ken Goodman is the president, and he'd love to talk with you about your project. Environmental Strategies, serving all of Arizona since 1989. Call 884-1114.
Hi, Joe Spina, Mama's Pizza. You know, the great Italian philosopher Antonio Garaducci once said, "To find balance in life is to find happiness." Now, I assume he was a smart guy, being a philosopher and all. So it gets me to thinking, balance is probably a good thing when it comes to pizza, too. You know, just the right amount of sauce, cheese, crust, and toppings. But consider this. What one mama's customer might think is just the right amount of something, another customer might think is too much or too little. That's why at Mama's we balance every item we make to each individual customer's taste. Extra cheese or light cheese? Heavy on the sauce or easy on the sauce? Crispy crust or lightly done crust? It's all in balance for each customer. And as Garaducci says, balance equals happiness, and that equals loyal Mama's customers. So I'd say that, on balance, that's a pretty good situation. Mama's Pizza with four convenient locations. Now repeat after me. Mama's Pizza!
Tucson Hebrew Academy is now enrolling students for the fall. THA always knew they had the best kindergarten in town, and now it's official. Following the Outstanding Teacher Award presented by the Jewish Federation of Southern Arizona to THA's kindergarten teacher, Jackie Miller. Kindergarten through 8th grade curriculum centers on rigorous academics, infused with Jewish values and ethics, providing a well-rounded educational experience. While many schools have cut the all-important arts, physical education, and health classes, THA ways, integrating them into the curriculum in a safe, nurturing environment. We graduate capable, confident students poised for the next chapter in their lives, prepared to enter higher levels of school, and ready to contribute to the larger community. Tucson Hebrew Academy is an award-winning Blue Ribbon school. Last year, THA awarded over $700,000 in financial assistance to students and their families. Great education is more affordable than you think. The best education comes from THA. Space is limited, including in their kindergarten. Call 529-3888 today to register or arrange a private tour. That's 529-3888 or visit THAAZ.org. We are delighted to welcome the two Jewish our guests this morning, Amy Efron. She's written a delightful book called Loose Diamonds, a nonfiction set of kind of gem-like stories, to be perfectly honest. She has written a variety of novels and magazine pieces and essays that have appeared kind of everywhere. Welcome.
Thank you. It's really nice to be here.
I should say Shana Tova, Happy New Year as well.
Same to you.
Thank you. So we were talking before we came on the air a little bit about your background. Could you share that?
Well, I grew up, some of the stories are about Los Angeles and some of them are about New York. And my parents were New York playwrights who moved to California. So I was born in Beverly Hills and my oldest sister, Nora, was born in New York, as was Delia. And they were screenwriters. And on my father's side, weirdly, his great-grandparents or something published the Russian Encyclopedia. So we've always sort of thought that it was somehow the family business, like being in the shoe business, that we were somehow in the publishing and writing business going back a long time. And I think my great-great-aunt is someone really strange, like Anna Akhmatova, although not by genetics, by marriage. I wish I could claim a genetic link to her.
Yeah, it would be nice.
Mm-hmm. I think she infused me, though.
In your writing, you know, you write in such a—it's really elegant style. And you know, being Jewish, I throw compliments around like manhole covers. But I have to say, I really enjoyed the book. Why did you decide to write nonfiction?
I published a piece in Vogue called I Love Sax, which is sort of not quite as elitist as it sounds. But in a way, I realized I could tell my life by Saks Fifth Avenue, the flagship store in New York, the sort of ups and downs of my life, times when I wasn't actually, when I couldn't afford to shop there, a time when my mother bought me a sort of Dr. Zhivago coat because my only legitimate address was going to be a boarding school in Woodstock, Vermont, because they were so dysfunctional at that point. And when I published it in Vogue, I've had the same editor for 100 years. Henry Ferris at Morrow contacted me and asked me whether I would write a nonfiction book. He's always kind of thought, I am a period writer. The thing about the book is some of the pieces are from childhood, the sort of magical person I met when I was a little girl who collected tropical birds, who was an amazing architect, but I didn't know it at the time, who was my friend. A sort of racy piece in the, you know, 70s about women who order champagne by the case. And I tried in the book to kind of evoke the period and the city, because I think cities also play to period to some degree. I think the location of something always informs the writing of it. And it sort of skitters around from childhood to sort of later adulthood and postmodern life, the problems of being a divorced woman with three kids and occasionally no visible means of support myself. I mean, you know, writing isn't the easiest way to always earn your keep. And cool. My admiration for people who can and do.
We will talk much more with Amy Efron when we come back on Too Jewish.
If your parents or loved ones are in need of advanced assisted living care, then you should know about Handmakers Tynan Neighborhood. It's the only program of its type in Tucson, and is designed for seniors whose needs have exceeded the care available from other assisted living programs. Dorothy Ho is a resident at Handmaker, and she's very pleased with her living arrangements.
My apartment is very comfortable. It's kind of like home now. And everybody here is very pleasant, too.
Dorothy's daughter, Gretchen's experience speaks volumes about Handmaker's approach to family and loved ones.
When she first came to Handmaker, I can honestly say that I felt as loved and cared for as my mother has stated recently that she feels she is loved and cared for here.
Handmaker is centrally located on Rosemont, just south of Grant, and includes one and two bedroom suites, cozy studios with patios and balconies, along with a wonderfully caring staff.
I don't even consider them staff, they're friends.
Phone Handmaker today for your tour and consultation, 322-7035, or visit handmaker.org. Taste of Judaism has everything you ever wanted to know about Judaism, but were afraid to ask. In three upbeat, fun, free, informative sessions, Taste of Judaism brings the joy of Jewish life and learning to you. You'll study with outstanding rabbis, including Two Jewish's Rabbi Sam Kohan. Learn what Jewish values, spirituality, and community are all about, and have a great sample of delicious Jewish foods. Classes are offered at various times at three Tucson locations, at Temple Emmanuel in central Tucson, on the northwest side, and on the east side. All classes are open to everyone, Jewish or not. Best of all, Taste of Judaism is free. There's no charge, but you must pre-register by calling 327-4501. More than 3,500 students have taken Taste of Judaism. Why not join them? Call 327-4501 and ask for Mila to register for Taste of Judaism, the most popular and effective introduction to Jewish learning and life. Call 327-4501 for your own Taste of Judaism.
If you have a question, comment, compliment, or criticism, kvetch or kvel, please email us at twojewishradio@yahoo.com or visit our website at twojewishradio.com. You can hear all past and present shows through the website or downloading us from there at the Apple iTunes Store as very popular podcasts. We commemorated an important but deeply sad date last week, the 70th anniversary of the Nazi massacres at Babi Yar in 1941. In a pit just outside the city of Kiev in the Ukraine, the Nazis murdered 33,771 Jews over 2 days. That Babi Yar slaughter was perpetrated September 29th to 30th of 1941. It was the single largest mass killing of Jews by the Nazis, and the failure of the world to react to that atrocity may have emboldened the Nazis to hold their Final Solution conference in January of 1942 in Wannsee, near Berlin, which led, of course, to the gas chambers. After surrounding the whole Russian Southwestern Front Army and capturing 600,000 Russian troops, the Nazis occupied Kiev in late September 41. They soon posted notices that all Jews, they called them kikes, had to come for deportation to the area of Babi Yar, a large ravine outside of Kiev. Disguising their intent until the last minute, and through brutal coercion, they managed to trick over 30,000 men, women, and children into coming up to the edge of the ravine, strip them naked, force them to lie down, and machine gun them to death. The Kiev Jews had gathered at the corner of two streets and then were escorted in small groups to the cemetery. They expected to be loaded onto trains for deportation. The commander of the Einsatzkommando reported a couple of days later, "Because of our special talent for organization, the Jews still believed to the very last moment before being murdered that indeed all that was happening was that they were being resettled." According to the testimony of a truck driver, victims were ordered to undress and then beaten if they resisted. All were driven in groups of 10 down a corridor of SS soldiers and then shot at the edge of the Babi Yar Gorge. The crowd was so large that most of the men, women, and children could not possibly have known what was happening until it was too late. By the time they heard the gunfire, there was no chance to escape. According to the Nazis' systematic report, 33,771 Jews from Kiev and its suburbs were systematically shot dead by machine gun fire at Babi Yar 70 years ago last week. Their money, valuables, underwear, and clothing of all the murdered victims was turned over to the local ethnic Germans and to the Nazi administration of the city. Apparently, only 3 Jews survived the Babi Yar. Wounded, climbing over corpses to escape, hiding at night from the Nazis who were proceeding to search for and shoot every wounded survivor by flashlight. The Soviets did not place a monument at Babi Yar until long after the end of World War II. When they did, they made no mention of the fact that the initial victims were Jews.
I would hang the baby's cradle on a balcony. Look below. Babi Yar, Babi Yar, would I see? But the house would burn and the flames climb. higher till the face of Bobby R. will be smothered in the fire. Mothers, help me sing, oh, mothers, help me weep. Oh, help me rock the restless ghost of Bobby R. to sleep.
After the Babi Yar massacre 70 years ago, the Nazis in Kiev went on to murder many others at Babi Yar. Gypsies, the handicapped, political prisoners, other civilians, even some soccer players who defeated a team of theirs. But it was those 2 days, 70 years ago last week, that we remember now. We welcome our maven on Israel, Guy Gelbart. Good morning, Guy.
Good morning, Rabbi. I
should say the guy is the head of the Israel Center, which has a great program planned for this year called the Heartbeat of Israel. Would you share that with us?
Yes, I will be happy to. We have an amazing program that goes on here for several years already of bringing Israel culture to the Tucsonian community. This program starts with a bang on this Monday, October 10th. At 5 o'clock, we will meet at the JCC for an early sukkah party, family fun party for the entire family with a lot of kids activities. The Heartbeat of Israel year-long brings a lot of Israel culture. This year we'll have two amazing concerts coming into Tucson. One is planned to be in October, in which we're bringing the singer Uri Banai. Uri Banai is a member of the leading family in Israel entertainment. And he will tell the story of this family, how they came to Israel from Iran. They started with a booth at the market in Jerusalem and got to be the biggest thing in Israel entertainment. Later on March 25th, we will be bringing Noah and Mira Awad, an Israeli and a Palestinian singer that sings together. They performed in front of the Pope. They represented Israel in a singing contest in Europe. And they're bringing, you know, a different perspective, a nice idea of, you know, let's sing together. Let's help our people get together to know each other. Let's have fun together, which is interesting. It's a nice approach. People that will decide to be part of our Heartbeat can also get this year a family pass for a year long. It's only $180 for a family, and all your family gets tickets to all the events year long, including the concerts, including everything. We will also give anyone that becomes a member tickets to the symposium on U.S.-Israel relationship that is organized by Judaic Studies in the U of A that will take place on November 9th. They'll have huge names there like Peter Beinart and other great speakers, Scheid Feldman and more. So it will really be a fascinating event. And the Heartbeat in general, it's a year long of great activities. We also have a film director of the film Faces of Israel coming to Tucson on January. And we have a lot. A Tu B'Shvat party, Hanukkah party, a lot of stuff. Yeah.
Sounds terrific. So the phone number to call the Israel Center to find out more about the Heartbeat of Israel is?
Well, it's the Federation number. It's
577-9393.
577-9393, and the extension is 132.
And they can also go to the website, and it's jewishtucson.org.
jewishtucson.org, click on the Israel Center, and through there you can go to the Heartbeat. And you can go to my Facebook page, which is Tucson Shaliach Guy Gelbart, become my friend, and get information about all the events when they occur.
And everybody at Too Jewish should be a friend of Guy Gelbart's. Thanks, Guy. We'll talk next week.
Thank you very much.
When we come back, we'll hear from our expert on the international Jewish scene, Tom Price, and get the old Jewish joke of the week. We visit weekly with the outstanding restaurateur, Janos Wilder of Janos Restaurant and J Bar in Downtown Kitchen and Cocktails. Good morning, Janos.
Good morning, Rabbi.
You know, I've got a new take on J Bar. We like to go there, actually love to go there, after Friday night services.
Rabbi, I'm staffing extra heavy for you. So come in after services, come out on the patio. It's beautiful out there right now. Have a margarita, have some great dinner. After services on Friday, any night of the week.
So every night except Sunday, my wife loves the fish tacos. I love the chilaquiles, but you also have specials on a regular basis.
Every night we have specials at J Bar, and all of the food expresses the flavors from this region. It's the beautiful, wonderful, exciting flavors of the Southwest. It's the flavor of where we live.
How can people make a reservation?
Just give me a call at 615-6100. Go to my website, Janos.com, make a reservation, and we'll be waiting to see you Friday night, any night.
Sounds great. Janos.com.
For 100 years, Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery has been known for their compassionate commitment to all the families of our community. Known as the most beautiful final resting place in southern Arizona, Evergreen serves all faiths. Their experience conducting Jewish funerals, Reformed, Conservative, and Orthodox, is second to none. From traditional services to the unique, Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery offers the best. To speak to a family advisor, call 888-7470, 888-7470.
We welcome our expert on the international Jewish scene, Tom Price. Good morning, Tom. Gemar Chatima Tova.
Good morning, Rabbi. Gam Lecha.
We started talking last week about the Muslim world and the fact that the Arab Muslim world is really only represents 20%, perhaps, maybe less, of the actual Muslim world. Let's continue on that theme. There are, as you mentioned last time, huge, important non-Arab Muslim countries, Iran and Turkey, that border the Arab world and don't often get along too well with the Arab world.
Right. Okay. So, first of all, one distinction that I didn't have time to make last week, but it's really important for you and your listeners to understand, is the distinction between Islam, which is a religion, and Islamism, or what some call Islamofascism, which is a political agenda to impose Islamic law on nation states and to impose a rather extreme or fundamentalist version of Islamic law. There are many schools of jurisprudence in Islam. There are traditional Hanbali, Wahhabi, etc., etc. Plus, there's the very fundamental distinction that's been around almost as long as Islam itself between Shia and Sunni. So it's terribly wrong to think of Islam as sort of a monolithic religion with one approach to everything. Nothing could be further from the truth. I mean, think merely of either Judaism or Christianity and all the different types of both that have proliferated over the centuries, and you begin to get an idea of how many differences there are within Islam. What people are less familiar with, they may remember that there was a time early after the Protestant Reformation when Protestants and Catholics made wars against each other in Europe. In fact, several centuries of armed conflict as each group of Christians tried to impose their version of Christianity on all of Europe. The Spanish Armada was but one example of this type of conflict. The Hundred Years' War was another. People are less familiar with the fact that in the history of Islam, especially the early history of Islam, there was routinely armed conflict between Shia and Sunni. And again, just underline the fact that Islam is anything but monolithic. Now, given the fact that there's so many different interpretations of Islam, even Islamism or Islamofascism has different interpretations and would be hard to impose because in any given state, there are so many different versions of Islam. Add to the mix the fact that the Turks, the Iranis, or as they historically were known, the Persians and the Arabs, were always rivals for power in the Islamic world and don't generally get along terribly well. You have a very complicated setting for whatever goes on in the Middle East, and the existence of Israel, which is, you know, widely regarded as some sort of a Western creation or Western presence or delayed result of the Crusades or whatever, further complicates relations among these three potential power centers of Arabs, Turks, and Persians. And there's some type of renaissance or winds of change, let's say, in all three parts of the Middle Eastern Islamic world. And all of those winds of change, of course, rock Israel's boat.
Let's talk more about that next week and how it's going to change things for Israel in this coming year. Thanks, Tom.
I look forward to it.
It's time for our old Jewish joke of the week. Jewish humor, your Bubby and Zadie knew, brought to you by Too Jewish as a public service. A tourist comes to Israel and sees the Western Wall, the Kotel. Not being too versed in religion, he inquires of another tourist about the significance of the wall. The other explains, "This is a sacred wall. If you pray to it, God might hear you." And so the tourist walks close to the wall and starts to pray. "Dear Lord," he says, "bring sunshine and warmth to this beautiful land." And a commanding voice answers,
"I will, my son."
So the tourist says, surprised, "Bring prosperity to this land."
"I will, my son."
The tourist says, "Let Jews and Arabs live together in peace, dear Lord." And the voice answers,
"You're talking to a wall."
That was the old Jewish joke of the week, special feature of Too Jewish just for you. You should live and be well. This week's Shabbat is more than just Shabbat. It is the Shabbat Shabbaton, the great Sabbath of Sabbaths, Yom Kippur. And since it's also on Shabbat, I guess that makes it the greatest Sabbath of Sabbaths. We have two Torah readings on Yom Kippur, one in the morning and one during the afternoon service. And while atypically for Judaism, we all tend to agree on what portion of the Torah is read for almost every ritual occasion. On Yom Kippur, there's a significant difference of opinion, really different choices, as to what Torah section to read. In Orthodox and conservative congregations, the reading for the morning of Yom Kippur this Saturday is a description of the rites of sacrificing animals on the Day of Atonement, from back in the time when the temple stood in Jerusalem, followed by an obscure and interesting ritual called the scapegoat. The afternoon reading in Orthodox and conservative temples is a long listing of the kinds of immorality, especially in detail sexual immorality, that are forbidden by the Torah. The most interesting aspect of all these sections is the description of the scapegoat, a term that has become part of our regular English lexicon. In the Torah, at the time of Yom Kippur, the high priest, the Kohen Gadol, in the course of preparing burnt offerings to place on the altar of the temple in Jerusalem, would select two goats. One would be marked for God, the other for Azazel, a kind of code name for that which is unholy. It later even came to represent the devil. The goat marked for God, like the bull and other animals designated for ritual sacrifice, would be slaughtered and roasted on the altar, a fairly normal procedure in the worship traditions of the day. But the goat marked for Azazel had a different career. Instead of being sacrificed in the regular way to expiate the sins of the people and seek forgiveness, he was instead led out into the Judean wilderness, which is not physically very far from Jerusalem, by the way. You can look east and see it out there. And then, from a mountaintop, the ritual would continue. The high priest would place his hand on the goat and symbolically transfer the many sins of the people to the goat. And that goat, uninjured other than by the moral weight transferred to its horny head, would be set free to wander in the wilderness. The scapegoat, through no fault of its own, would carry the sins of the Israelites out of the land, but it would remain unharmed, an enduring symbol of the errors of our people. The term has remained with us, a representation of the poor schnook who is tossed out by much more powerful higher-ups to take the fall for their own sins. We still have such scapegoats today, of course. Every staffer sacrificed on behalf of his superior's failure is a kind of fulfillment of this scapegoat routine. So why do we have this ritual in the Torah? The message is an obscure one. While the essence of Yom Kippur is the concept of personal responsibility, the scapegoat seems to imply that even on a day dedicated to self-examination and atonement, it really helps to know that some sins can be passed off on a lesser creature. Or perhaps the idea is simply that we need to know that there is some ritual that will finally release us from our many failures, even though we know that we will remain always fallible and human, even after Yom Kippur. The Torah readings in the Reformed Jewish tradition, which nearly always are very close to the traditional ones, are not so on Yom Kippur. In many ways, they are superior. In the morning, we chant the great Torah portion of Nitzavim, Atem Nitzavim Hayom Kulchem, you stand here today, all of you. From richest to poorest, most exalted to most humble, and the Lord your God presents you with a great and sacred choice. You can choose either to follow the mitzvot, to live a life of morality and dedication to ethics and goodness, or sin again and stray from God. That choice is really between spiritual life and spiritual death, but the choice is yours to make. Choose life, uvacharta v'chaim, that you and your children may live long and flourish. Take responsibility and choose life, a great message on the holiest day. The afternoon reading on Yom Kippur for Reformed Jews may be better still, for it tells us how to live that life. Taken from the book of Leviticus, the holiness code at the heart of all true religion, it essentially teaches us how to choose life. To be holy, because God is holy. To be generous to the poor and the downtrodden. To create a just society, right the wrongs of the world. Love our neighbor as we love ourselves. The greatest message in this grand conclusion to this highest of holy days, choose life and live it well and morally for the sake of the greater good. Gemar Chatima Tova, may you be sealed in the book of life for a good year, and may you have an easy fast. When we come back on Too Jewish, the fine writer Amy Efron will talk about her fascinating new book, Loose Diamonds, and what it means to be a retired psychic, when we return on this first New Year's edition of Too Jewish.
When you're looking to buy or sell your home, you probably want Tucson's best realtor on your side. That realtor is Jill Rich. As real estate values change, it's comforting to know that Jill Rich knows Tucson's real estate landscape. She follows the trends. She knows the neighborhoods. She even knows how to help you find financing. But most importantly, Jill cares. It doesn't matter if you're looking for a starter home or a castle. It's like having your bubby in the realty business. For sellers, Jill will develop a personal marketing program that'll sell your house fast. There's no one who knows Tucson real estate better. You can reach Jill Rich at Long Realty's River and Campbell office. Call 349-0174. Jill Rich, providing strong representation in a caring way. Call 349-0174. We continue with our Too Jewish update on news of Jews around the world with commentary.
California jury found 10 Muslim students at UC Irvine guilty of misdemeanors for disrupting a 2010 campus speech by Michael Oren, Israel's ambassador to the United States and a former guest of Too Jewish. In an incident that drew national attention, 11 Muslim students stood one by one and interrupted a February 2010 speech by Oren at the University of California, Irvine. Oren twice walked off the stage as students shouted mass murderer and war criminal before they were hauled out of the room by campus police. A planned Q&A session after the address was dropped. Last week, an Orange County, California jury found 10 of the students guilty of misdemeanor charges for conspiring to disrupt and then actually disrupting the speech. Charges against an 11th student were dropped when he agreed to do community service. The 10 students were sentenced by Superior Court Judge Peter Wilson to 56 hours of community service and 3 years of probation, but the probation will be reduced to 1 year if they complete their community service by January 31st of 2012. The Muslim Student Union at UC Irvine, which organized the heckling, was suspended for a year by the school for violating its code of conduct, but 4 months later the suspension was changed to probation on appeal. Not a very large penalty, but to some degree I think we can say that justice has been done and freedom of speech affirmed. In Israel, the deaths of 25-year-old Asher Palmer and his infant son, killed September 23rd when their car crashed near Kiryat Arba on the West Bank, has been ruled to be the result of a terror attack. A rock thrown through the windshield of their car led to their deaths. Having been the recipient of just such an Arab stoning way back in 1992, happened as I drove east from Jerusalem, I can tell you that it is a horrifying experience and shocking, and one that could easily kill you if you're driving an automobile. There is nothing benign about a thrown rock. In Washington, D.C., the largest single gift ever received by the U.S. Holocaust Memorial Museum came from the estate of Eric F. Ross. It donated $17.2 million last week. The money will be used to support the Washington Mall Museum's endowment fund. With that gift, Ross and his late wife, Laura, donated more than $30 million to the museum. While they were alive, the Rosses, both refugees from Nazi Germany, donated more than $12 million to the institution. Having experienced firsthand Nazi anti-Semitism and hatred, Eric and Laura Ross became determined and generous investors in Holocaust education, said the museum's director, Sarah Bloomfield, a former guest of Too Jewish. Their loss and suffering inspired remarkable generosity. And all you Beamer drivers out there, well, the family that owns BMW is admitted to using Jewish slave labor during World War II. Some 50,000 forced laborers are estimated to have worked in the factories of industrialist Günther Quandt, producing arms for the Nazis, according to a study commissioned by the Quandt family itself. Gabriel Quandt, grandson of Günther Quandt, told the German newspaper Die Zeit that it was wrong for the family to ignore this chapter of its history. For a cool 65 years. The independent study by the Bonn-based historian Joachim Scholzek concluded that Günther Quandt and his son Herbert helped bolster the Nazi regime. A three-year study was commissioned in response to public outrage when a German television documentary made the accusation. That documentary had access to the company's files from the Third Reich period. Günther Quandt also is accused of taking over Jewish-owned companies during the war with the blessing of the Nazis. One caveat, the Quandt family, which still owns a majority of BMW, did not buy its shares of BMW until 15 years after World War II. But the patriarch of the clan, Günther Quandt, became a Nazi Party member way back in May of 1933. He died in 1954. Quandt family still owns a majority of shares in the luxury car maker. And that's the news of Jews around the world. We welcome back to Too Jewish our guest this morning, Amy Efron. She's the author of the new book, Loose Diamonds and Other Things I've Lost and Found Along the Way, and other pieces, as they like to say in the writing trade. One Sunday Morning and A Cup of Tea novels. This is a nonfiction book. I think the weirdest story here, not necessarily the weirdest story, but there's competition, but the there's a very interesting interview you end up doing with Squeaky Fromm. Tell us about that a little bit.
I was actually 17 at the time, and I covered the Manson trial.
Now, first of all, how did you get to do that?
I was writing for I was actually the receptionist at a magazine called Scanlon's, which came right after Ramparts. It was Warren Hinkle's and Sidney Zion's magazine. And it's where Hunter Thompson did his first Gonzo pieces with Ralph Steadman. And we were way ahead of the curve. And I somehow convinced Sidney and Warren that if they sent me back to Los Angeles, I knew 19 people connected to at least the Hollywood side of the story, and that I had friends who had a ranch next door, not realizing that the ranch next door was a good 7 miles away at best. And I somehow convinced them to. However, the magazine went broke before I published. This was in the old days where the trial went on for 7 months. And I was always haunted by the interview I did with Squeaky. I mean, there was something she had. I wanted to rescue her. She had such a lovely quality, and she was gone. And it was a chance encounter on a street corner where she'd left home intending to never return, had a fight with her father. She was a dancer, so there's that self-image thing. And she met Charlie, and she went with him. And I've always been fascinated. A Cup of Tea is about this, too, where a chance encounter can change your life. It's also my advice to anyone who's single, no matter what age you are. If you really want to get married, you have to sort of behave like it would be okay with you if the next minute of your life was the rest of your life. That's my dating advice. I'm not saying you should run off with everyone you see, but I am saying you should be prepared to change your plans.
Yeah.
You know, this is obviously that's a pretty major change of plans there, I would say.
Well, that was a major change of plans and not one I approve of. I mean, you can always, one can always leave. And she never did. I mean, she's always stayed devoted to him. And she was very well read. She was very soft spoken. She was very funny. And I was very struck by the afternoon I spent with her, and I'd never written about it, so I finally did in Loose Diamonds. And weirdly, I have not covered a trial since, and I'm covering the Conrad Murray trial for the Daily Beast and Newsweek, and I've been down there for 7 months, the Michael Jackson doctor trial.
You write really movingly about some of your, you know, you integrate some of your growing up experiences into the story, but the title story, Loose Diamonds, is about jewelry theft, diamond theft in California, huge cash and sort of recovering what was lost. Can you tell that story briefly?
We were burglarized, sadly burglarized, and we lost a lot of things. We lost our computers, which was terrible. And I was in the middle of a spec screenplay, and I did not have a copy of it. We lost all our jewelry. But there was a fireplace poker on the bed, and as the police photographer said to us, you were lucky no one was home, because sometimes these things go sideways. And the thing I think that struck us most was the fireplace poker. And then as days went on, and it's not that I had a lot of really valuable, like Elizabeth Taylor pieces, because I didn't at all. I'd had pieces that I'd sort of been lucky to collect along the years before gold was what it costs now. And I missed them not really for their kind of accessory value, although that was useful, but because of the memories that they held. Because the piece had been given to me by a writer I dated who's now dead. Because I remembered being at the Toronto Jewelry Mart when my first husband was making a television series. Because they held memories.
A totally different story. You talk about the fact that you're a psychic.
No, I talk about why I quit being psychic.
Yes.
Yes. So, I actually just had a very famous psychic contact me on Facebook.
He's a psychic. What does he need Facebook for?
Well, no, actually, this is a really famous psychic who contacted me through a friend on Facebook, and I thought, whoa, I don't know if I want to go down this path. But I've actually quit being psychic because it scares me. And weirdly, every single thing, you're going to laugh at me, in that story is true.
No,
or did you know that?
I read it, and it's called nonfiction, so I assume you wrote about what really happened.
Right. This is true.
The part that I found the hardest was the key, you know, getting it to fly up into a lock.
We all found that really weird, I have to say.
I'll bet. And I just was wondering if anybody was drinking heavily at the time.
No, is the answer, and nobody had taken drugs. We were literally, in some old-fashioned way, playing bridge.
Why?
And I had a long conversation with my friend T-Bone Burnett, who's not Jewish. His religion, he found it incredibly hard to believe in anything that had anything to do with any psychic ability. And it was this very complicated conversation to follow. And at some point, he got very emphatic about it. And I looked at my husband and gave him my first husband, Sasha, who was and is Israeli, even though he is not my husband anymore, and gave him a sort of watch this look, and I turned my attention to the key in the lock next to the breakfast table that was upright. And about 30 seconds later, the key flew out of the lock and landed in the middle of the bridge table, at which point I went, okay, I've gone too far. But I have been known to predict earthquakes and... you know, I do know when something, and I'm not always right. I won't say that if I tell you that something terrible is going to happen today, you should believe me. But there are things I've done that I can't explain. I mean, I once picked up the New York Times and turned to the obituary columns, which I don't read, and ran my finger down it and went, not here, not here, not here. And someone who I'd been engaged to, his father had died. And I knew that I was supposed to look for it. And that was weird, and I had witnesses. When my sister got married, for one of her marriages, one of my sisters, in a sort of runaway fast wedding, I ran out, we were living in a tiny house, and I bought, and we were really poor at the time, 5 dozen tuberoses, which I don't know if you know that what they are. They're sort of white and pink, and they're very, very fragrant. And I am allergic to them, okay? I'm allergic to them. And we lived in this tiny house in Laurel Canyon, and I drive home very triumphant with myself, having spent a complete fortune at the florist that we do not have. And my first husband, who was somewhat lenient about my occasionally peculiar behavior, said, I really don't understand why you did this. And I started arranging them around the house like we're having a party. And he said, okay, you're allergic to these. Why are you doing this? No one's coming over. And 2 minutes later, the phone rang. And my sister told me that she'd just gotten married. And at the time, tuberoses were her favorite flower. Now, I can't explain that. I just can't. I can't explain that action in any way except that I just went and I can't. Can you explain it? You know more about mystical, religious.
I think there absolutely is. There's another layer of things that you tap into sometimes, and some people are much more able to do it, or it's more accessible for them, accidentally right. or intentionally. I want to thank Amy Efron for a great visit here on Too Jewish. Psychically fulfilling, I might add also. Her book is called Loose Diamonds and Other Things I've Lost and Found Along the Way. Really interesting, delightful, and a good read, I might add. Amy, thanks very much.
Thank you.
When we come back, we'll hear about next week's guest, get a final musical play out on this first New Year's edition of Too Jewish.
For 100 years, Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery has been known for their compassionate commitment to all the families of our community. Known as the most beautiful final resting place in southern Arizona, Evergreen serves all faiths. Their experience conducting Jewish funerals, Reform, Conservative, and Orthodox, is second to none. From traditional services to the unique, Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery offers the best. To speak to a family advisor, call 888-7470, 888-7470.
Thanks for being here with us this morning on Too Jewish with me, Rabbi Sam Kohan. Join us next Sunday at 9 a.m. Our guests will be a group of outstanding young Israeli shlichim, representatives of Israel here in America. And, of course, listen to all of our podcasts on iTunes or our TooJewishRadio.com website, and friend us on Facebook. Our playout this morning comes in honor of Yom Kippur, this Friday and Saturday, October 7th and 8th. It is Atava Chartanu from the Liturgy of the High Holy Days, actually all festivals. You chose us for this observance, as sung by my dad, Rabbi and Cantor Baruch Kohan. My friends, may you be blessed with a Gemara Chatima Tova and sealed in the Book of Life for a good year. Have an easy fast, and as always, may you have a Shavua Tov, a good week, and a week, we pray, of peace.
Mitzvah Sefer, Fekir Avdanu Mo.